Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the second last day of 2025. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hi everybody. And
we're joined by Carolyn Shelby, who's the Principal SEO at Yoast, Ryan Jones, Senior Vice President of SEO at Razorfish and founder of Serpicon, and Topher Cohen, Senior SEO and Large-Scale Publishing Expert. This is our panel, our review panel for the 2025 year-end review. Folks, welcome to Webcology.
Great to be here.
Well, happy holidays. Super happy to be here.
Thank you all for being here. It was a weird year. I think we come from a tech industry all of us come from the almost beginnings of the internet, the public internet phenomena. Most of us come from the very beginning of search. And in all of my years working the web and working search, I would say this was probably the weirdest of them. Would you all agree?
It's up there.
I don't know that I'd agree exactly. I think in the very beginning of the public internet, things were very Wild West and there was a lot of upheaval. I do see echoes of that today. I don't know that today necessarily is quite the same level of insanity, because I think the technology and the corporations are a little bit more mature. But this, by far, in terms of things that have happened in search, this has been pretty bonkers.
I kind of agree with Carolyn that if you take us post-Florida update, then yeah, this is in the top 3 to 5 weirdest years in our industry. But the early days, the pre-Florida update, when, you know, yes, you could hide text on text and nobody gave a crap. this doesn't rank in that world at all. But yeah, I'm with Carolyn. Like in the modern version of the internet, then this is probably, or in our industry, this is probably one of the oddest, most upheavals I've seen in a while.
And Topher, I think you hit a key point. Like while I still miss the days where you had to learn Perl before you could share your crappy opinion on the internet, right?
Thank you.
I still miss those days, but I think we've hit an inflection point in SEO, where we're finally seeing it's no longer about tricks and tactics, and it's, you know, we're fully becoming real marketing now. And I think we're seeing that the industry is coming to terms with the fact that I can't be a one-trick pony anymore. I can't just have a private blog network and call myself an SEO, or, you know, I can't just focus on one little narrow thing and be an SEO. With the advent of the AI and the way the industry's going, we have to become real marketers. And I think that's, a lot of people are like, cool, got it, been doing that forever. And a lot of people are scared.
I think the best thing that can come out of all this, the tag on Ryan just said, is that maybe this will clear out of our industry the very well-meaning, very good human beings, I'm not disparaging them as people, but who are SEOs solely because they know how to use a tool set.
Yeah.
Not because they know SEO or how to actually market and do all of us. I know for sure, myself, Ryan, and Carolyn, all of us, when in the early days of this, we were writing our own code. We knew what to do. We knew how to test things. We were doing all those things. And nowadays it's, let's run this series of tool sets, and whatever it says, I'm going to hand it off and I'm going to get paid. And hey, good for them. But I that's not who our industry is in my mind.
Carolyn, you are the principal SEO at one of the premier tool sets in the industry. And I heard you agreeing with that statement.
No, absolutely. So I think the difference here is that It's not that being able to use tool sets is no longer effective. It's that it's no longer such specialized skill that you can get paid solely because you know how to work that tool and everybody else thinks it's too hard or doesn't have access to it. So for Yoast, this isn't particularly a bad thing because we have always tried to democratize access to tools and provide tools that aren't prohibitively expensive and easy to use for the average consumer, which is what the LLMs are also doing in terms of understanding SEO. So they're making it so you don't have to spend $500 a month for a SEMrush subscription. You don't have to spend this prohibitive amount of money for a small business to have access to the knowledge and information that you can get, that everybody can get now, or that you can get with a $20 a month ChatGPT subscription. Does that mean that all of the information that they're getting and that they're executing on is perfect or even awesome? No, but the information and execution you're getting from the people that you're paying to use the tools that they know how to use that you don't know how to use wasn't necessarily great either. So there's just a, I wouldn't call it a leveling of the playing field, but there's definitely a replacement of people that are solely in this because they have access to tools that small businesses and individuals can't afford,
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
and Jim, I want to follow up real quick and clarify. I'm not against tools. I love tools. I've used every person on here who has a tool set. I have used and have used the heck out of them, and they are incredible tools to help me as a marketer, help me as a professional SEO, be able to understand and to automate and to move more quickly. But just because I can output something from a tool doesn't mean I understand what it means. It doesn't necessarily mean I understand how to implement it or whether or not it's important for my vertical or not. The amount of tools that you will tell me something about a site, and I'll be like, I get why you're telling me that, but for my vertical, that's not important. So I'm going to devalue that. I think tools are great, but I think unfortunately for a while in our industry, there were people that, as Carolyn said, all they had was access to tools and they knew how to use them well. And so they were being SEOs, and in reality, they were just outputting from tools.
There definitely needs to be that human element, and I'm seeing that, right? I think I'd be remiss to mention I even launched a tool this year, so I believe in tools, right? I have SiftRecon. I'm not going to sell people on this show, but I launched it because there was a gap in the industry. Our tools haven't evolved, right? The tools are not evolving with the state of search right now. Any of the big tools, they're all behind, and so I made one for my own needs. But what we're seeing in the industry is the SEOs haven't caught up yet, right? There's new data out there. There's all these new, AI, there's new data, there's new ways of measuring, there's new tools, but most SEOs still haven't caught up. A lot of SEOs are still like counting H2s and be like, oh, my competitor has four, I better have five, right? That is not how search works anymore. But the people aren't catching up. They're not, the education's not there. And so I'm finding it a struggle to sell tools because we have to retrain a generation of SEOs that were reliant on just comparing numbers to a competitor and saying, okay, they have their word bolded 7 times, I should bold it 8 times. And that might have been how it worked in 2004, but it's not anymore.
I have a question to jump in with here, kind of between both conversations we're having here on tools and then also the state of things. When you were saying like people could just use tools and didn't really have to have a lot of understanding, was because the tool kind of said, here's what's wrong and here's the issue and here's how you fix it. So there was a lot of ability to not have a lot of SEO understanding and just use a tool, I think is what we've been talking about. But there was a big discussion during the pandemic of the difference between needing to be a specialist or a generalist. And I feel like now we're back into where, I mean, I'm always a generalist. I went through the dot-com bust. I always have more skills so I can move as I need to through the industry. But a lot of people are told to concentrate just on one thing. But now with everything that's coming out and the AI search and how search is evolving, do you feel we're back into the state where people need to be more generalists, more understanding of cross disciplines as opposed to just understanding one discipline?
I think people need to be marketers. And I've been saying this for a while, is I think the pivot is, I mean, there's always going to be a need for specialist SEOs or GEOs or whatever term we decide on this week. But I think people need that broader understanding of marketing. What is, the overall goal? How does SEO play in with social media and the PR teams and the CRM teams, and everything all together? And that's the growth opportunity. If you don't understand that, someone else that does is going to come in and do a better job.
So I think where being a solely an SEO, a pure SEO, is not going to be a big business. It's not going to be big business, I think, going forward, is because there's no longer going to be a business model where you can spin up a site and you can SEO it to number one and you can make money on the traffic, because monetizing pure eyeballs is going to be purely the realm of big brands, because you're not going to be able to have access to that. One thing that's happening in the news industry right now is that the big brands are making deals with the AIs, with the LLMs, to be compensated for their content. That level of negotiation and those contracts are not going to be available to every newspaper on the planet. Those are reserved for the LA Times and the New York Times and the big papers, the BBC. Like, if you're a podunk or you're starting up, you're out of luck. You better find a different way to monetize that, because that monetization route is no longer viable for you.
Jeffrey, you have any thoughts?
It's 2020. It's about to be 2026, and these are words I never thought would come out of my mouth. Is that long live affiliate sites? Long live affiliate sites? Long live affiliate sites?
Can affiliate sites compete in this environment?
I did it.
So
You know I
yes.
did it.
Well, indeed, but I mean, moving forward into 2026 into
It can.
2027.
It can. By the way, it's harder now than ever to get an affiliate site to play by Google's rules and to rank well. When I say affiliate sites, I don't mean a site that's solely affiliates. I mean that Carolyn's right. Eyeballs alone are not gonna pay the bills any longer, right? And you're right. If unless you're that top 2% or 3% of news sites, you're not gonna get a deal with OpenAI or with Google or somebody, right? So you gotta supplement that income, and that income is gonna be with very selective, very targeted on brand affiliate deals. I'm not talking about, CNN underscore or Forbes, where they were selling basically domain authority. I'm talking about if you run a sports site, then having affiliate links to sports books or having affiliate links to Fanatics is not a bad thing, and it is a way to supplement your income, as long as you understand what is inbounds and out of bounds, and you don't get your hand smacked. It is a way to supplement that money, and I think that that's going to be more important going forward than I think we've seen in a while in our industry.
So just to piggyback on that, when I was doing sports gambling, one of my goals was to diversify the revenue streams, because I could tell that the organic SEO was just not going to carry the day anymore. But the other thing that we noticed, and I see this across a lot of content creator spaces where they used to have blogs and the blogs aren't a viable business model anymore. They're pivoting to YouTube, they're pivoting to video creation. And by the time I left that sports betting position, the YouTube channel was by far the biggest moneymaker that we had. And by biggest moneymaker, it was a small core group of guys, and they were still doing $1 million a month in YouTube revenue alone. So I think where you used to spin up blogs, you're going to now just jump right into TikTok, right into Reels, right into YouTube, because that's where the money can still be made quickly.
So again,
And
all those opportunities are still there. It's just the media and user behavior is a bit different.
we're already ruining that. I have seen demos of so many tools
Must
where
be.
you can enter a script and people, AI will spin up all your videos for you and spin up all your TikToks for you, and you just enter your script, right? We've already started ruining that space, right? The automation has hit it. So it'll be fun to follow, but you're 100% right. I'm seeing it with large clients too. People don't read anymore. Like, that is, name a problem in society outside of SEO. Every problem in society is because people don't read anymore. Whatever, not even political, whatever side you're on, the problem is people don't read. And it's the same thing online. No one's reading blogs. And I've had clients, like I had a potential client I just turned down came because their traffic's going away. And when I looked at their traffic, their number one term last year was, "How old is Jenna Ortega?" Right? That's gone. You're never going to rank for that, because now her IMDb and Wikipedia rank for that, and AI just tells you the answer. So that
It's
business
going to
model, it's over. It's over, right?
Yeah, I think that in to you want to talk about what's going forward in 2026. If you call yourself an SEO, and you are only SEOing the website that your company owns, then you're not doing anything good for your business or for your company. And I don't know if I'd call myself an SEO. I want to make sure that anybody can find my company's content wherever it is on the web. Yes. I don't care if it's on my website or on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram or freaking Facebook. I don't care. I want to make sure you can find my content and you can interact with it. Because and also as an SEO, me personally, I don't care if you come back to my site immediately. I want you to build the habit and the trust with my brand because you've seen my content on YouTube. You've seen my content on TikTok or Instagram, and you trust it and you like it and you learn from it. So then at some point in theory, that should click in your brain and go, oh, I'm going to go to that site because I know they're going to have the information for me. So why am I searching for it? Let's just go to bigbrand.com.
You want your brand to live rent-free in their head. That's what our goal
all
is.
All day long. Carolyn's been on panels with me, and Ryan, I think you've heard me say this at conferences. I only want you to search for my brand. I only want you to find my brand 3 times in Google, and the 4th time, I want you to come to me.
So you're hitting on a point that I've been pressing hard for 2026 for all SEOs, and that is take more freaking credit. Because and what I mean by that is there's a lot that we do that just isn't measured in clicks, and Topher's getting at that, right? Is, you know, what are we taking credit for, like, the SEO person found us from SEO and then they went in the CRM database and then we remarketed to them and they bought something. Or the paid search landing page that we helped create and got better click-through rates, better cost per clicks, better conversion rates, right? The retargeting ad on Instagram because they found us via search, right? The YouTube video we helped rank because of SEO, that they came in and we were able to show them ads somewhere else because we YouTube cookied them. All of that stuff is because of SEO, and we're still only looking at the clicks, not the whole marketing picture that wouldn't exist without us. And so in 2026, my hope for SEOs is that we take more freaking credit, because none of that stuff happens without us showing up in search or the other channels we touch. And we're not getting any of the credit for it. We don't take credit for it. We're so myopically focused on clicks. And
throw a new question in. Oh. I'm sorry, Christine.
No, I was just gonna say, that's a really good point that Ryan brought up, and I don't know what your next question is, so I don't want to step on it. So I'll let you go first, and I'll bring mine back around.
Well, I'm curious about KPIs in a changing universe. We used to follow the clicks. We used to, try to prove the efficacy of our works by saying we've improved actual, like, visitor traffic to your website. What are the KPIs moving forward?
Money.
Yeah, the biggest KPI is going to be revenue.
Yeah. Now, obviously, we know this, but traditional SEO, wherever it is, whether it's on-site or off-site, quantifying that tie-in to actual dollars and cents can be tricky without correct attribution. But if you work that out, then that's all it's about. It's literally about showing how much we did X as a team, and revenue went up with Y, and we can show you that we had something to do with this. That's the key revenue, and that's all businesses care about. They don't care if we're getting more or less people to the website via Google or wherever. All they care about is, are we making more or less money?
Well, right? Some of them do. Some of them are still, and I've seen this with a lot of companies I've spoken to recently. They're still metricing their employees on traffic to the website or, you know, clicks and things like that. And the problem is, one, it's not actually doing anything for your business. And two, that is so gameable. So why are you bonusing people on something that they can hire out to Fiverr or something to manipulate? That's ridiculous. I do acknowledge that we're getting into a point where attribution is fuzzy. And I don't know that we're going to get back to the crystal clarity that we had before. But that's how marketing was before the internet came along anyway. That's why everyone loved when the internet came along, because suddenly we had really concrete, like, very detailed metrics that we could look at. We're going back to the time when it was a lot fuzzier, and you were inferring a relational situation rather than proving it. And I think we're just all going to have to make internal emotional peace with that.
So go
ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ryan, and I'll ask my question.
I told this story in a keynote I just did at a conference, and this was years ago. I remember sitting in a room with a CMO of a company, and Yahoo was with us, and they said, hey, do you guys want to buy the homepage takeover this year? for Super Bowl Sunday. Put your brand on the whole homepage. And the CMO said, I don't know, we didn't really get many clicks from it. You know, the metrics, it just wasn't worth the $1 million or what they were going to spend. Didn't get enough clicks, et cetera. And the Yahoo lady, without missing a beat, says, that's fine. Toyota was hitting us up. They were interested in it anyway. And the CMO said, never mind, we'll take it. And I was like, what? You just said there's no metrics. But it hit me, and as it hit him prior, there's value in being there. If I'm not there, someone else is going to be there. And while I can't quantify it or measure it, I still need to be there because otherwise someone else will be there. And that's why we buy TV ads. It's why there's ads on park benches. It's why billboards still work on freeways. We can't measure it, but your brand is out there. It's in front of people, even though it doesn't directly lead to clicks. And we need to start thinking more like that.
Real
Well,
world
look
example
at
of that weather.com gives their data for free to Google to go in the one box. There is no paid deal there. Even when IBM owned them, that data, when you go to Google and you type in weather and your zip code in that one box that says powered by weather.com, that's giving them 100% free. But their mindset is if we're not there, somebody else will be. So we want to own that. And it's worthwhile of them giving away their literally their single most valuable resource that company owns, which is over 100 years worth of weather data and prediction modeling to Google to make sure that they own that spot and someone else doesn't.
you're boxing out the competition. Like look at the big old companies that have done really, really well with marketing over the course of the last century. You got companies like Coca-Cola. What's their motto? Their motto is, if it stands still, you paint it red. If it moves, you put a logo on it. They'll advertise on anything. Do you think that a red car going around a racetrack is going to directly result in pop sales? That I'm sorry, soda. Or whatever it is you people call it. We call it pop in sales that second. No, that you're not going to be able to tie a direct metric to that, but people remember the brand. And when they see the brand then in the stores where it's familiar, they go, oh, I've seen this before. I like them. I like that car that they sponsored. I'm going to go buy this. So it's definitely a relationship. It's just not as easy to prove. But you got to box out the competition. It's an opportunity cost.
Those are all really good points and really important. But backtracking just a little bit, we had a client who came to me and said, I want the team to start giving me pretty KPIs like traffic and visibility. And the thing is, this is a small business, it's in legal. And between the SEO and the revenue generation, our intaker forms, intakers, all sorts of different things that we have no control over. So what do you advise people when you say like, oh, the KPI is the revenue, but a lot of times they don't have control over page design, conversion optimization, copy on the page that's not SEO, things of that nature. What do you tell SEOs now to use for KPIs that are either within their control or how to bring those under their control? That makes
You have
sense.
to evaluate that based on what they do control. So if you control the page content, then you can look at rankings, you can look at traffic, you can look at those things for directional guidance for how you can do things better. But you do also need to look at is your information and your message being picked up by other channels. So are you growing in any of those channels? And I don't think there's a single metric that you can tell everyone to watch. It really does depend on what that team controls, what they have influence over, and you determine the metrics to watch based on which metrics are going to explain to you or show you if you're doing a better job than you were yesterday, if that makes sense.
It's a tough problem to solve. And I would say most of my day with my clients at Razorfish is not doing SEO, right? I have a team, I run the team, but most of my day is having these organizational structure changes, like Carolyn's talking about, with clients. I'll give you an example. We inherited a client a long time ago. Their previous, we took over their paid search and SEO, and their previous agency was doing the client's goals were set up for the lowest cost per activity on paid search. And that was the client's goals with their bonus and everything. But when you optimize paid search for lowest cost per activity, you spend all of your money at bidding on your brand name and nothing else because you get all the people navigationally looking for you. And that's it. And so you have no incremental visitors coming to your site. You made no sales you wouldn't have made if you completely turned off paid search because you spent all your money bidding on your brand name. And you have to have that conversation with them. And I remember this client came to me and she was like, "We take SEO seriously." And I go, "No, you don't." And my account person was ready to explode. I could see him turning red in the room when I said this. I was like, "You don't take SEO seriously." And she's like, "Yeah, we do. What are you talking about?" I was like, "You spent $1 million last month bidding on your brand name, and you spent 200 grand last year on SEO. That's not serious at all. Like, you might care about it. It might be something you care about, but you're not serious about it." And she was like, "Huh, I can't argue with that. You're right. Like, if we could spend $1 million a month bidding on our brand name on paid search, we're not investing enough in SEO for all the other stuff." And
So true.
it's these conversations. They're tough conversations, but that's what I spend a lot of my day doing. And unfortunately, a lot of SEOs, they can't get the stakeholders in the room, right? You might not be able to have that level of conversation. And you're gonna have to champion your client to speak up and in their own organization. But change. We need to enact change, and it's everything's changing, right? Like that's what we got to focus on.
So there's a widely known tiny little she's petite, she's not little, big SEO who told me recently that she had a client who was doing great with their organic SEO, and then all of a sudden their click-throughs went through the floor in December because the paid team was getting bonused and graded basically on how many branded clicks they were bringing to the website. So they spiked all of their brand name bidding, and everyone was clicking on the PPC instead of clicking on the organic results, and that's why all the organic results went through the floor. So it looked like the SEO team was failing when really it was just this weird choice of KPIs and how they're measuring the different teams. There was no coordination between the two teams. Instead of having everybody working together to reach a common goal, they're basically pitting them against each other, and all they're doing is cannibalizing each other's efforts.
It's bigger than just SEO and paid search. When you throw in email and social and CRM and everything else, it's insane. Most companies I talk to are not set up KPI wise for success.
Sophie, you have anything you want to add?
I'm sad that they're both very, very right. My biggest banging head and on an enterprise level is usually not with paid, believe it or not, because I can kind of usually make a partnership with paid, right? That better quality score that I'm helping build helps them get, pay less and vice versa and so on and so forth. It's with social media and the social media team because their KPI is engagement. And so because of that, they don't want to put links in the description. They want to move them to the comments, which we know reduces click-through rate. They don't want to, they just want you to scroll through their reels or scroll through the pictures or whatever. That's usually been my biggest headbang against is the fact that I understand that that's your KPI and that's how you're graded, but I'm graded on this too. So let's work together. And I usually have to pull teeth or go above somebody's head.
That's a hard thing in a large organization. Sometimes talking with you three about SEO is like asking millionaires for financial advice. You have such large organizations that you work with, huge brand names, and large teams to do the sheer amount of work necessary to do a full-scale marketing campaign. So the little guy, the single person agency, how do they keep up? How do they affect the group that they're working with to create a system of teamwork so that things can actually get done?
I think that a ton of SEOs that I've talked to recently, I was really surprised when I said this. They looked at me like I had a third head, is that it's more important now than ever that we as an SEO understand the overall business that we are working with or for and what makes that business their revenue. And there are times that your SEO recommendations may be counter to whatever that revenue driver is. And you have to be okay with that. And once you're okay with that, and you show, in my mind, you show the company you're working for and the people working for that you're just there to make sure to help the business become more profitable, then it's been my experience when I've worked with not the big brands that that's usually a great way in to gain some trust and some goodwill, and it'll help you move things forward. But is to not just talk about, well, SEO should do this, SEO should do this, Google wants this, Google wants this, but make sure that you understand that just because Google wants it or AI wants it or whoever wants it doesn't mean that's the best move for that business's vertical and their revenue stream. And it confuses me when I talk to SEOs. The last conference I was at, I had this conversation with a bunch of younger SEOs, and they were all like, well, that's not my job. I don't really care about that. I'm like, yeah, it really is your job, dude. 1,000%. You're just an acquisition pipeline. I don't care what you call it, but that's what you are. And unless you understand why you're acquisitioning and where you want them to go to maximize profit, then you're doing everybody a disservice.
Yeah, I have a client, and right outside the CEO's office are two TVs. And so like his desk is positioned so they see these two TVs in the hallway right above his computer screen. And it's just revenue, and it's broken down by like month over month, quarter over quarter, day over day. And it's just dollar. That's it. That's all that's on the screen. And we were in a meeting, and they were panicking about SEO clicks being down because of AI, which for this particular client, if you ask it, what's the best blank, AI is all them. The only answer AI gives is them for what's the best, their product name. But all the links are YouTube and Forbes and Consumer Reports and everybody else saying they're the best, not actually them, right? And they're panicking about SEO clicks down. I just pointed to the TV and I'm like, that's what we need to focus on right there. That's all that matters, because people are asking what the best thing is and AI is telling them. And then when they go to Walmart, guess what they buy, right? They're buying our product. And so we're not taking credit for it, but that number right there is up and it's going up, and just keep focusing on that number on that TV. we're doing what we need to do. And, you know, sometimes it takes that bluntness, but it you know, it's what we got to do.
The old Google Analytics used to allow us to report assists. You could just show the whole line of how like individual users moved from A to B, C to Z to conversion point. Is there a way to do that now quite easily?
I don't know if it's easy.
I was going to ask Ryan something similar, and just on what's the data that you use? Because I'm sure your people ask for data. What is the data you use to show the assists for other people that aren't working with the brands that you guys are?
It depends on every client, and we have advanced analytics teams. On some clients, it's easy because they actually sell online and you can track it right in retail. In other clients where you have to go buy it at Walmart instead of through them, it's not very easy to do, right? Like at all. So you just have to look at Walmart reorders and total sales and everything like that. But there's also advanced modeling we can do. We've done advanced modeling, you know, through machine learning, where we can predict the incrementality of a click when it comes to paid search on a term compared to, you know, who else ranks and what we're getting in SEO and what's going on in all the social channels. A lot of big data modeling type stuff, which is really, really cool. We can also, you know, correlate certain actions to sales and keep feeding it in monthly sales data and all the other data that we have to update those correlations so that we can kind of get a value of like, okay, if we drove someone to do this thing, it typically correlates to, you know, $4 toward a sale, even though the sale happened somewhere else, but we have all this data we can tie together. But you need very smart people that aren't me to do that type of stuff.
And some money to do that. I don't think they're like out of the package software that just does this for you, correct?
There's a library called Prophet that Facebook put out in Python that does really good forecasting if you feed it data. Good. And it's if you know a little bit of Python, you can probably get it up and running in 10 minutes. So there's my tip, start there, but, yeah.
Well, that's super helpful because someone who is a small business could hire a Python developer to do that for them. So that's good to know. I didn't know that existed. So I learned something new today. Awesome.
Carolyn, I feel terrible. I stepped in on you.
I was just going to say for small agencies and small practitioners, I would really say, stop trying to automate everything. Stop doing just checklist SEO, because everything that can be made into a checklist, you can automate on your own without hiring someone to do it for you. No one's going to pay you to automate something they can automate themselves. The real quality work is work that you're doing as a human, because your judgment is coming into play. And That's what people are going to be paying you for, not just can you hand a checklist off to a junior and have them crank something out. You definitely need to be positioning yourself, I think, more less on deliverables and more on visibility. So they're not paying you just to do these things. They're paying you to do things that are going to increase their visibility. Whether or not that directly translates into more traffic or not, that depends on the business. But I think smaller agencies, especially now, need to pivot to how they're billing and get away from factory SEO where you're just churning out widgets, because they can churn their own widgets out now. They've got ChatGPT. They can do that stuff by themselves. They don't need your help for that.
That was actually
So,
the title
go
of my
ahead.
last keynote, the anti-checklist checklist.
Yeah. So I want to jump in just real quick because there's a question I had earlier, but it fits better here anyways. I've noticed that when I'm posting, let's say on LinkedIn or in general, even simple things like in the Google algorithms, like hidden gems, people don't know that hidden gems is a special spot in the page construction, which pulls like LinkedIn and Quora and Reddit, right? All those Reddit posts. So I've noticed that there's not, there's, there seems to be a decline in the advanced understanding of how search works at a time when I think you have to have the most understanding of how search works. Are you guys perceiving that as well, or is that just in my little part of the world?
Oh my God, yes. Like, and that is my biggest struggle with SERP Recon, right? Like, I launched a tool all about semantic relevance using the methods Google uses from the Google leak, the Yandex leak, right? It works like a real search engine. I almost built a search engine to build the tool. But I'm having trouble selling it because SEOs want Page Optimizer Pro or Cora, or there's other tools out there. I shouldn't have named them. Oh well. They want tools like that that are like, your competitors have the keyword once in the first paragraph, four more times in the article, once in an H1, and three times in an H2. You should do that. And that's not how any search engine works. Like, SEOs are still stuck in this lexical model of search where it's counting the words on the page or keyword density. Again, not a thing search engines use. And we haven't updated our mental model since 2004 of, like, SEOs do not understand vectors and cosine similarity and, the best match algorithm for what they actually use instead of keyword density. Like, machine learning, right? All the stuff we argue about, all the Google algorithms that are machine learned and whether or not they use clicks or train an algorithm against clicks. We can have a whole show on that. But we lack the basic understanding of how search engines work. We're stuck in 2005.
Well, first of all, I don't think you should paint such a broad brush and say all SEOs. I think the fundamental lack of understanding of how a lot of things work is pretty human-wide, not just in our industry. But I think that the benefit of all these changes is that we're going to maybe sift out some of the, I don't want to be insulting, and I don't want to
Cookie
insult
cutter,
like I don't want to
cookie.
insult drones, but like it's going to sift out the drones from the people that actually are capable of making rational decisions. And that might be good for us. Maybe we've got too many people trying to say that they do this right now, and it's sort of polluting the overall appreciation of our skill set, because you've got a lot of people who aren't, they're just looking to be spoon-fed checklists. That's what they want. Tell me what to do and I go do. And that's not actually doing the work. That's just, I mean, a machine can do that. A machine could do it better. I don't know.
Like, I'm going to push back on there a little bit with you, Carolyn, because I in the forums, I over and over, I hear get your Yoast set properly, make sure it's set exactly like Yoast is telling you. I actually saw somebody chastising a senior SEO, Bill Hartzer, for not having his Yoast settings properly done. So
So Bill,
what I'm asking is for the large scale tool sets, I'm not saying it's your response, it's the tool set's responsibility that skill sets declined, but is there training that could have been done several years back that might have brought a I remember there was a whole generation that just threw links at it because that was the SEO skill set 15 years ago.
They're still
And we
doing
had 5 years of people who learned to just throw links at it, but didn't learn
so.
the fundamentals.
So there are fundamental classes that we offer that not everyone takes, which is very sad. When it comes to having the settings correct versus using the tool as guidance in the actual posting part, those are like two different sections. So there's the you need to have the base settings correct so that you've got your fallbacks set up. You've got, it's making the sitemap correctly. It's just little things that you need to turn on or off. But the fact that you can turn them on and off means that not every setting needs to be turned on for every situation. We let you turn things off because some people might not need them. That's entirely a separate situation from what happens when you're building your page or you're writing your content. That's where it's just guidance, and you can't possibly have it set correctly because it's evaluating what you're writing at the point of writing it. So I'd love to know who was yelling at Bill Hartzer, because I've actually had people argue with me that I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to the Yoast product in Reddit. And that's why I'm just like, I literally give up on Reddit because I can't argue with you idiots.
It was in the big SEO subreddit. Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of people there that think they are more expert on how Yoast functions than I am, which I personally enjoy. So I apologize to Bill on everyone's behalf because I'm sure that that person was mistaken. But it's always up to the individual as to what they turn on and turn off. People have different comfort levels, and no, there are a lot of people who just install it and never actually configure it at all. That is a problem. And if I had a nickel for every time I encountered a site like that, I could buy a very nice fancy Frappuccino. So I don't know. I still don't know that it's how do you can't force people to learn things. There's always going to be people who are not going to learn the fundamentals of how things work. How many people can drive cars and have no idea how an internal combustion engine works? Lots of them.
I think that's
Absolutely.
where.
And Carolyn, I apologize. I didn't mean to throw that at you as like
No,
your
I'm not mad.
responsibility. Google.
I think that's where the earlier conversation falls in is like, are people who just use tools and don't really understand SEO and search and how it all works together can't get away with just pushing a button anymore. Like when Ahrefs and Semrush came out with their audit tools, I actually had Fortune 100, so I would talk to who asked me what's the difference between my audit and a Semrush audit tool, right? And there were people calling themselves auditors who would just push the tool, put the spreadsheets together, and hand it over to the client. And so now I think that's most important. You guys tell me if you agree or not, that your SEO has to be someone who understands algorithms, not just Google, but also social and all the other places you need to be visible. Understand how search works, like things like neural matching and hidden gems are very simple and basic. And yet I find 99% of the people I've talked to in search, I know you guys are not in that 99%, don't know what those are. And they're some of the most important aspects. We're quibbling over like Google leaks over that may or may not be relevant versus talking about like how real search works. And a lot of times when people talk about how real search works, they get annihilated at first, the dog piled on. So I'm just curious if you think one of the most important aspects right now is the knowledge of your SEO, the knowledge of the person so that they can interpret your metrics, your KPIs, your tool set, understand AI search and all the other algorithms where you need to be visible.
So I'm going to take that. I'm going to take what you said and go a step further. My last company was that we brought in an external person to do an audit of our core site, right? And there were lots of conversations with that person, and we knew they were using tool sets. Of course, they should be using tool sets. But the difference was is there was ongoing conversations of them coming to us and saying, "All right, so I found this in my audit." And us going, yeah, we know that because of X, Y, and Z, we have this technical issue or a business issue or a brand issue. So we can't, so this is the way we have to do it. And so when we finally got that final report from them, it wasn't just an output from the tools. It was an output from the, it was the data from those tools and from multiple tools, but tailored in a way with information that worked for my vertical, for my site, with knowledge and SEO information put behind it. And that was only because A, we hired someone who knew what the hell they were doing. It's very clear about this. And secondly, we, that person listened to us and paid attention to us when we were talking about, we hear you, we get that. That's never going to change because of X, Y, and Z. So how can we mitigate its impact? And that's the recommendations we got back. And so that was, that I think is the big change between someone who just has a tool, whether they're getting it because they work at a company and that company buys it and they are using it for freelance, or they're spending the money themselves and they're just outputting a report and handing it off and going, well, this is what you need to do. Or in someone who works with the company, works with the vertical. And I think that could be someone who's in-house or an agency or someone you bring out, or someone you bring in externally. We all know that if you're an in-house SEO, Carolyn will know this. There are times you just need to bring an external SEO in to do an audit because whatever reason they've stopped, what you're saying is white noise to them. So getting a really good external auditor is incredible. And I think that that's the difference between someone who just outputs tools and someone who does an audit or someone who does SEO.
It's not just SEO knowledge, right, Topher? It's how do these SEO findings not only fit into broader marketing plans and broader business goals, but how do they fit in with the specific technical situation at that company? Because you have to be able to explain and interpret all of those things into a ranked priority list of what to fix and how to fix it.
Right.
And that's where you're
absolutely right. That was a big takeaway, is the fact that that's a key statement. It's not just SEO. It's also understanding what that CMS and that site and that team can and can't do.
It's
right. Understanding what that business wants and doesn't want. I think that's really I go back to my earlier statement, SEOs who don't understand how their business makes their money and doesn't prioritize that, I don't understand them and how they still have jobs.
And that's why
good audits are 5 and 6 figure deals, not these, I just pushed a button and I waited until it finished kind of, you know, and then I printed it out for you to make you feel like you were getting your money's worth and then charged you $5,000 for it.
I've sold so much business to clients where they have purchased an audit from known people in this industry, some people that we all know, and I won't name them. They've purchased an audit from these people, and then they've called me and said, I don't know what to do with this. Can you guys help us prioritize this and create an action plan and a roadmap based on all these findings? Because we don't know what to do with this audit. And everyone starts off with, like, the first page is, you don't have a robots.txt file. Okay, I don't need one. Missing robots.txt file says crawl everything. And you know what? That's fine. It's not causing any issues.
Probably do, and they just couldn't find it.
Right. Or you know, there's 3 errors in your XML sitemap. Great. How much money is that going to make me this year? Or like, that's what you're starting off with, right? All the SEOs come in or they're like, you know, hey, your URL structure could be better. Yeah, I've got 1 million URLs. Am I going to change the URL structure just to make it look prettier? With, you know, why would I do that? Why would I do that? Right? Like, how much more money am I going to make? That's going to be a huge cost for no real value. And, you know, any SEO can look at any other SEO's website and find an issue, right? I could look at Carolyn's, she could look at mine, right? And we could find an issue. Because like Topher said, we don't know the politics or the technical debt or the reasons that led into it. And we don't know that it's actually going to matter. It might not make any sense for a business to do it because it might not make any money. And that's the skill set that's missing. Like, stop printing out audit reports from tools and sending them over as work. And that's the critical thinking that's missing. And unfortunately, like, to get back to Christine's point, every time I try to pitch a conference, and I've pitched them all on sessions about how a search engine works or understanding semantic relevance, understanding machine learning, or you know, Christine says neural matching. I pitch sessions on trying to understand how all that works and what we can learn from it and how we can build our own scripts and tools to emulate it. No interest. Every conference comes back with, no, my they want checklists. How do I get more links? That's what my audience wants. And the conferences know their audience. They're not doing anything wrong serving to their audience, right? Like, they're giving the people that want to buy tickets what they want to buy tickets for. But that's what our industry wants right now. They don't want to learn. There's a
part of it. They're dumbing it down it's sad that they're dumbing it down because that's what the people want. Sometimes you need to get, you need to hear things you don't want because you need to hear it, not because that's what you're, you know, I don't know.
I'm okay with the dumbing down to a level as long as you offer an advanced track, right? And I think that's, I'm noticing specifically post COVID, less and less conferences are offering advanced tracks. At PubCon, Ryan sat in on the in-house panel and there were five people in there. We used to fill, Carolyn, you know, we used to fill ballrooms with in-house panels, right? Because they wanted to learn. They wanted to know. They don't, unfortunately, A, I think less companies are sending people to conferences because of budgets and such, which is sad in general.
Yeah.
But B, the people they are sending are not traditional, just straight ahead SEOs. They are marketers who also do SEO. So they want the bigger picture items. I'm hypothesizing there. That's a Topher hypothesis. But we used to fill up whole ballrooms.
Yeah. I think the biggest room I ever had was like 500 people, and it was standing room only, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
That was
now,
a long time.
You know, it's empty. There's empty seats, and it's,
yeah,
it's sad.
No, is that a post-COVID thing? Like Topher just said, businesses are reluctant to budget for travel, and I think a lot of people just got out of the traveling thing during the pandemic. Or is that just the way the industry's going? People don't want to learn.
I would like to throw in there, Brighton SEO San Diego is very well attended, and it's a very well-run conference, and it has full rooms of people attending talks. I probably had over 100 on my talk on anomalies and why it's your best friend. They do need more expanded talks because their talks are generally 20 minutes to 30 minutes max. But so I do think there's an appetite for it. The European SEO conference industry is doing very, very well. I just don't think we have a lot of big conferences here anymore. We have some small niche ones, but the conference industry really isn't something people are investing in. And I think that's a missed opportunity because it's, for Brighton San Diego, the tickets are insanely cheap because they get all their money from their sponsors.
And from a foreigner's point of view, I wouldn't risk crossing the border or anything. Not politics aside, honest to goodness, this is straight up business. If half your audience feels uncomfortable coming to where the conference is at, maybe it's going to be a smaller conference.
Yeah, but this has been going on for years. This isn't recent, that the U.S. conferences have been declining. So anyway, I'm just saying out there, the Brighton San Diego one, I've gone to the two now, I think, maybe three. And it's doing very well. So I think there's an appetite for it. I just think that we just don't have the conferences that attract, like businesses don't want to send people to a small conference of like 500 people with local focus, right? They want a big conference. They want a conference that's going to have vendors there and things of that nature. And I'm just saying right now, Brighton is doing so well, they're actually moving out of the hotel into the convention center.
Ryan Topher, Carolyn, are you speaking at large conferences this year? I mean, Christine as well, are you at conferences this year?
I haven't applied to anything. I don't really know what to apply to anymore, really. I do state a search because I really like it, and I do Brighton because I love the Brighton conference. But
Ryan Topher, Carolyn.
I keynoted too last year. So far, nothing on cue. I'm at the point where I prefer to be invited than to pitch, to speak. It's not an ego thing, but... the ones I am talking to are non-SEO conferences. I'm going to programmatic conferences, retail conferences, where I can be the only SEO in the room. And I'm finding a lot more value in that right now. I still love the big SEO conferences. If there is a PubCon in Vegas this year, I will be at PubCon in Vegas. Speaking or not, I will be there. But, you know, I still love the big SEO conferences. If you want me, ask me. I'd love to speak. But the ones I'm actively going after are the ones where I think I can find clients. And I'm trying to branch out a little bit outside of SEO right now.
I'd like to throw one out there to everybody, by the way, because it's under event ownership now, not personal ownership, is Affiliate Summit. So I filled in for them several times and I spoke, they didn't speak last year, but I spoke the 4 years prior to that. I got more clients in the one the year before last than I have ever at an SEO conference. I got six signups right there. Because they don't, surprisingly, the Affiliate Summit has very few SEO speakers. And I was speaking on SEO and AI, which they have no speakers on. So I had a room of like over 120 people. And I was rated one of the best talks, not because I'm necessarily one of the best speakers, but it was content that people really, really, really wanted. And they just don't focus on it. It's very surprising. So anybody out there that wants to speak and possibly get clients and have a fun time, the Affiliate Summit's really well run We'll get in for this year, but for next year.
I have a hard time. I had a hard time at the end of my last year at my last job to get the okay to pitch and go, because unlike what you just said or what Ryan just said, I'm not there to get clients. Right. I'm there to do three things. Expand my knowledge base, right? Because there's going to be people that there who are going to know things that I don't know. Hell, the people on this call know a ton of things I don't know, and I want to pick their brains and I want to learn from them. Also, for me to kind of show that, oh, this company has hired an authority. So down the road, potential employees who may want to come to us, right? And then third is, and this is the dirty secret that I guess every brand figures out but never wants to talk about, is I'm there to promote me as my brand. Let me tell you, if I didn't do all the conferences I've did, the position I'm in right now, I would be six ways a Sunday screwed. Right? Because I have somewhat of a, I'm nowhere near where it was when I was at the big three red letters. Right? But I still have some level of, oh, people know who I am because I go to conferences, because I speak, because I do those things. Right? And because of that, it's helping me now in this job search in this world we're in now. But the ROI to my business isn't really there like it is for Ryan, who works for agency, or Carolyn, who works for a tool company, or if you're an individual practitioner. So I think that I don't know what the fix is there, but that's my issue right now, Jim, is the fact that, and right now that, you know,
I've had a very busy speaking schedule. Last year wasn't as busy as it's ever been, but it's ramping up. And then Q1 this year, I've got a lot of travel coming up. So I'm keynoting SMX Paris, and then the next day I've got a solo talk at SMX Munich. Like I'm literally leaving Paris, getting on a plane, going to Munich, and then talking the next day. And I'm, you know, got a lot of talks all over the world. I will say though that it's important enough to me to have consistent speaking gigs lined up that I don't wait for. I shouldn't say it like that. I'll fund myself to go if the company doesn't want to fund that adventure, because it's important for me to maintain consistency, even if I'm not picking up clients directly. And a lot of these, while some of them are SEO related conferences, like SMX is obviously digital marketing. I do WordCamps. I do lots of different types. I think I'm doing a food blogger conference in January, and that's not strictly SEO, but there are people that use Yoast. They use WordPress. Some of them use other things. There's so many places where SEO is valuable, and it's not necessarily SEO conferences per se. So I would say if you can get to a conference, by all means go. And if there's no one talking about SEO there, say something to the people that are running it that, hey, you know, we should get some SEO speakers because SEO is relevant and necessary for what our business and industry, whatever that may be, does.
It's funny that the old is new kind of thing in the situation that back in the 2000s, there was a prominent tool company that was an up and coming tool company that was their business strategy, and it worked really well for them. They branched out, and yeah, they still spoke at SEO conferences. But they also were putting themselves at conferences where anyone who had a website and promoting their tool to every one of those verticals. And it worked well for them for a long time. And then the industry changed and everything changed. But yeah, it's kind of interesting that we're kind of going back to that, which I think we should.
I would also say that, as Carolyn mentioned, I think I previously mentioned, the international space is still thriving for SEO conferences. Europe especially. I know there's a big one in Thailand that everyone really loves going to. There's one still in Australia. I know people travel from the US, so I'm assuming it's good. So if you're in the US and you're looking for conferences, because you don't seem to have a lot of conferences now, Europe is a great option. I went to Amsterdam and spoke for iGaming, which was not traditional SEO, but was off the affiliate space. And I got it was nice. They paid for the room and the flight, and I only had to speak one day, and they gave me 2 extra days hotel. So I was there for 5 days, which was a lot of fun.
Not to make this all about conferences, but let's be clear. I don't think we want to go back to the days where that there were, you know, enough conferences a year that we were traveling, you know, close to 150 days a year to go to conferences. I don't know if we want to go back to that.
No.
You know.
No.
No, I don't know. If we have a travel budget and I was on that lecture circuit with Webmaster Radio. So that was huge amounts of fun. We had a travel budget and tons of stuff packed away in the speakers.
My early days on at the Big Three, my first couple of years at the Big Three, I read letters. I did almost every one of those conferences. I did all the SMXs, all the SESs. I did the PubCons.
The past was a huge amount of fun, but we have a 2026 is coming up. We only have a few minutes left. Before we go, is there something that is really exciting each of you? Something that you're really looking forward to moving into the next year? Don't all jump at once. Oh, yeah, something really scaring you then. I mean, like,
I got this. I think this started in 2025. I think that I saw somebody talk about this on LinkedIn, and I agree with that. I don't remember who brought it up, and I'm sorry about that. I'd love to attribute them. Is that calling yourself a technical SEO today means you actually have to be a technical SEO.
Yeah.
Right. And because, and I'm gonna give a little secret sauce. We boosted at my last job, we boosted our schema dramatically, our schema markup dramatically. And it helped immensely with us showing up in AI overview and AI mode. And on a side note of that, you've got to be okay. And you got to make sure your business is okay with you showing up there and not getting clicks. It goes back to what I talked about before, boxing out. You've got to, if you're not there, your competition is, right? But I think that's what I'm really excited about, is someone who is a technical SEO, who also does editorial work. I mean, let's be clear. I've been in multiple newsrooms in my career, and I know how to do that, but I prefer to be a technical SEO. I think that's really exciting to me in 2026, is that not only is it important, which I think it always has been, but it's going to take the chaff away, and only the good is going to stand, because you really have to be a technical SEO. You can't just go in and go, oh, just add some H2s and make, no, you got to really kind of know what you're doing to navigate going forward. At least that's my opinion.
I'm excited to see growth. I'm excited to see industry growth and people growth and skill growth, like you just said. That's what I'm looking forward to, because if we don't grow, we're not going to be around as an industry. And like Carolyn hinted at, I think we do need to prune a little bit out of the industry, right? The people just following checklists, like, it might be time for another job. And I don't mean that discouraging or in a bad way, but that job's going away. So I'm excited to see growth. I'm excited to see how our industry reacts and responds, how companies adapt, and I'm excited to help lead it. So it should be a fun year.
Carolyn?
Oh, I'm excited to see what happens, because everything is growing and changing so fast that it's a job just to keep up with all the two changes. And we're getting to a point where things are changing so fast that by the time you think you understand something, it's already changed. So it's just exciting, and I'm interested to see where it goes. I am glad, though, that we're getting to a point where I think there's going to be more value placed on employees and practitioners who have that flexibility in their thinking and the depth of understanding to interpret everything and then make it fit into the current business practices. Whereas the people that were just executing checklists, while they still have value, they're not going to, I don't think they would be accidentally taking the place of someone who has that of knowledge. I think that those knowledgeable workers are going to be valued higher. And I think that's a good thing, because that encourages people to try to understand more so that they can then be valued higher.
I have to say that before I left my last position, I was the most senior SEO outside of my boss. And I would say that my boss would say that her and I were on equal footing as senior SEOs, especially at that company. But everyone else was junior. And I, as I said, as I walked out the door, I think our industry's future is bright because there's some brilliant SEOs working at that company. We hired a person right out of college. She graduated college at 24, right? She interpreted and saw things on that site that my old eyes never, ever caught, and was able to convey them to the editorial and the engineering teams in ways that I couldn't. And that just gave me hope going forward for our industry. I'm not saying that everybody in our industry is that way, but there is those pockets of those people. Like Ryan said, these were not checklist people. And even my counterpart on the other major site that I own, who was much junior than me, they didn't want to stop learning. And that gave me a lot of hope, is they understood they didn't know it all, and they're willing to ask the question. So that made me feel somewhat good when they were kicking me out the door, you know.
So the kids are all right.
Yeah, exactly.
The future's safe because the kids are all right. Now, one thing I did get from the three of you is a sense that there is a future. Things are moving forward. There will be an SEO or a search marketing industry. It mightn't be called SEO moving forward. We might have new acronyms or whatever, but there will be a search marketing industry moving forward. Last thing I'm going to ask of the three of you, any advice to people in the industry that we haven't already given, besides growing and learn more? Anything? What should people do to be here in 2027?
Learn marketing and learn business, your business, or be able to understand and absorb your client's business so that you know you. It's not even just understanding what drives them. Tell them what needs to drive them. Sometimes what they need is business advice, not necessarily SEO advice, but that SEO advice is going to further their business needs, and they don't always see what their business needs. It's like when you ask people who their biggest competitor is, they don't always know who the actual marketplace competitor is. It's the guy they hate the most. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes what they think in their head isn't necessarily a true reflection of what's going on and what their needs are. And your job really is to be that voice of reality for them.
I can't say that any better. I think you hit on every point I wanted to say, which is good that we're on agreement here. But yeah, I think people need to grow. Grow your skill sets, right? Learn to code. AI can help you, right? Learn to code to solve your specific problems. It's never been easier to learn to code with AI. And you can create so many one-off tools to solve weird problems never solvable before. And trust me, every up-and-comer and new entry into the industry is doing that. And it's going to be tough for the old hat people to learn. But grow, learn the marketing, like Carolyn said. Learn how a search engine works. Adapt our thinking, right? We have to understand how search engine and how AI works now. And how all of marketing works together, because that's what we're really optimizing for now. And we can't do it if we don't understand it.
Ryan hit it on the head. Both Ryan and Carolyn said exactly what I was going to say. I'm going to add slightly to it and say that don't panic. Stop panicking. The people on this call have lived through the following things. We lived through Penguin. We lived through Rank Brain. We lived through, remember when we all had to optimize our sites for connected devices because nobody was going to use a computer anymore and they was going to speak to a speaker and get all their information back? Remember when that was going to happen? How'd that work out for everybody? My point is the fact that keep true, understand what you're doing, and show your value outside of AI to your business, right? I know of a major brand who has gotten rid of most of their SEO team because they believe that they can do everything via prompts.
Yep.
Right. So show your company that you can do this, or your client or whoever, that you know what, that you can do this, and that you're smart enough and you understand their business. And that's going to go a long way in 2026, in my opinion, on top of what all the really smart people in this call said, people way smarter than me.
I'm just upset that you started that sentence with don't panic and did not include always carry a towel.
Yeah, I missed that there, Ryan. I'm sorry about that. I'll be mailing my geek card back in here.
Both very cool fruits.
Very good.
Okay. And you know, all three of you are very cool fruits for spending time with us on web calls today. Carolyn Shelby, Principal SEO at Yoast. Ryan Jones, Senior Vice President of SEO at Razorfish and the founder of SerperCon, and Topher Cohen, Senior SEO and seriously large-scale publishing expert. Three of you. It is really cool seeing the three of your faces again. I mean, that alone is a Christmas treat. Thank you so much for spending a time on Webcology with us today, and best of luck going into 2026. Eh?
Thanks for having us. Friends, you've been
listening. Sorry, I was going to say thank you, everybody. I took too long of a pause there, Jim. I'm sorry. Go ahead. close
And
out
you have been
the
listening to our year-end 2025 year-end review panel. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for listening all year long. Massive thanks to Audience Key and Mix Studio, our sponsors. Thank you to Darren and Brandy for starting this whole circus years and years and years and years ago. And for Brasco and Ricky for keeping everything going and keeping the gears oiled in the studio. But more importantly, thank you to the audience. Please remember to love and share and like each other as much as possible. And do the same with our show too. We really, really, really appreciate that. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. Best luck in 2026. Don't panic. Sage advice. And thank you so much. Rank well. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.